Chapter 15. Nikanor Ivanovich's Dream. It is not too difficult to guess that the fat, purple-faced man placed in the clinic in room 119 was Nikanor Ivanovich Bosoi. He did not end up at Professor Stravinsky's right away, however, for he first spent some time in a totally different place. Nikanor Ivanovich had few memories of this other place. He could only recall a desk, a cabinet, and a couch. The men in the place had a talk with Nikanor Ivanovich, whose vision was blurry from head rushes and general agitation. But the talk turned out to be rather strange and jumbled. To put it better, the talk did not turn out at all. The very first question posed to Nikanor Ivanovich was this: "Are you, Nikanor Ivanovich Bosoi, chairman of the Tenants' Association of 302B on Sadovaya?" Bursting out in hideous laughter, Nikanor Ivanovich said exactly this:
"I'm Nikanor. Of course I'm Nikanor. But what a deuce kind of chairman am I?"
"Meaning what?" they asked, narrowing their eyes at Nikanor Ivanovich.
"Meaning," he replied, "that had I been any sort of chairman, I ought to have instantly figured out that he was one of those evil spirits. After all, what is this? Cracked pince-nez, decked out in rags? How could he possibly be an interpreter for a foreigner?"
"What are you talking about?" they asked Nikanor Ivanovich.
"Korovyov,"
Nikanor Ivanovich exclaimed.
"Set up house in our apartment 50. Write it down, Korovyov. You need to catch him immediately. Write it down. 6th entrance. He's there."
"Where did you get the foreign currency?" they asked Nikanor Ivanovich affectionately.
"True God, God Almighty," spoke Nikanor Ivanovich. "He sees all, and it serves me right. Never laid a finger on it. Never suspected any foreign currency. May the Almighty punish me for my sins,"
Nikanor Ivanovich continued emotionally, all the while buttoning or unbuttoning his shirt and crossing himself.
"I was on the take. I took our stuff. Soviet money. Registered folk for money. No argument. It happened. Our secretary, Polyuznev's a good one too, a damn good one. Let's be frank, everyone on a tenant's board's a thief. But I didn't take any foreign currency."
In response to a request to quit fooling around and explain how the dollars ended up in the ventilation shaft, Nikanor Ivanovich fell to his knees and swayed, opening his mouth as if trying to swallow a parquet tile.
"Say the word," he moaned, "and I'll eat dirt that I didn't do it. And Korovyov, he's the devil."
All patience is known to have limits, and the voice coming from the other side of the desk was raised, hinting to Nikanor Ivanovich that he'd better start speaking in plain language. Then the room with the couch was filled with the savage howling of Nikanor Ivanovich, who had leapt from his knees.
"There he is! There he is behind the cabinet! Look at him smirk! And his pince-nez! Grab him! Cleanse the room with holy water!"
Blood left Nikanor Ivanovich's face. Shaking, he made the sign of the cross in the air, darted to the door and back while singing some psalm, and finally began spewing utter gibberish. It became absolutely clear that Nikanor Ivanovich was in no state for any sort of talk. He was led out and placed in a separate room, where he quietened down somewhat and turned to praying and snivelling. Naturally, they drove to Sadovaya and paid a visit to apartment number 50. But they did not find any Korovyovs, nor had anyone in the building seen or known any. The apartment, occupied by the deceased Berlioz and Likhodiev, who went to Yalta, was completely empty. Wax seals hung peacefully on the cabinets in the study, undisturbed by anyone. With this, they left Sadovaya, and the confused and subdued secretary of the tenants' board, Polyuznev, departed with them. In the evening, Nikanor Ivanovich was delivered to Stravinsky's clinic. There he became so unruly that he had to be injected with Stravinsky's special formula. Only after midnight did Nikanor Ivanovich fall asleep in room 119, occasionally emitting heavy, pitiful moans in his sleep. But the more time passed, the easier his sleep became. He stopped tossing and moaning, began to breathe easily and regularly, and therefore was left alone. Then Nikanor Ivanovich experienced a dream, undoubtedly triggered by the day's events. It began with Nikanor Ivanovich envisioning that some people with golden trumpets were leading him very ceremonially towards a set of large, lacquered doors. At the doors, the escorts played a sort of flourish for Nikanor Ivanovich, and a deep, resonant voice intoned cheerfully from the heavens. "Welcome, Nikanor Ivanovich. Turn over your foreign currency." Extremely surprised, Nikanor Ivanovich looked up and saw a black loudspeaker. Then he somehow found himself in a theatre, where crystal chandeliers shone beneath a gilded ceiling, and quinqué lamps lined the walls. Everything was nice and proper, befitting a small but very posh theatre. There was a stage, covered by a velvet curtain, with oversized golden images of 10-ruble bills littering its dark cerise background like stars. There was a prompter's box, and even an audience. Nikanor Ivanovich was also surprised by the fact that the audience consisted of a single gender, male, and was entirely bearded. Another astounding feature was the absence of seats in the theatre. The whole audience was sitting on the beautifully polished and slippery floor. Embarrassed in this large new company, Nikanor Ivanovich dawdled for a while and then followed the general example by sitting cross-legged on the floor, huddling between some brawny, bearded redhead and another gentleman, pale and severely unshaven. None of the sitters paid any attention to the newly arrived spectator. Then came the soft ringing of a bell. The lights in the theatre extinguished, and the curtain parted to reveal a lit stage with a solid black velvet backdrop, containing an armchair and a table with a little golden bell on it. A clean-shaven young actor, with very pleasant facial features, came out from the wings. He wore an evening jacket, and his hair was parted down the middle. The audience in the theatre livened up, and everyone turned towards the stage. The actor stepped up to the prompter's box and rubbed his hands together. "Everyone seated?" he asked in a soft baritone, and smiled at the theatre. "Seated, seated," basses and tenors called from the theatre in chorus. "Hmm," the actor spoke thoughtfully. "And how you don't get bored, I'll never know. Everyone is outside, walking the streets like human beings, enjoying the spring sun and warmth, and you're stuck here on the floor in a stuffy theatre. Surely the programme is not that interesting." "Well, to each his own," the actor concluded philosophically. Then, altering the tone and timbre of his voice, he loudly and cheerfully announced, "And so, the next number in our programme, Nikanor Ivanovich Bosoi, Chairman of a Tenants Association and Director of a Dietary Diner, let's hear it for Nikanor Ivanovich." The actor's words were met with general applause. The astonished Nikanor Ivanovich's eyes bulged as the MC shielded himself from the stage lights with his arm, found Nikanor Ivanovich among the others, and beckoned him gently on stage. And without realizing it, Nikanor Ivanovich ended up on the stage. Multicoloured lights struck his eyes from the bottom and from the front, causing the rest of the theatre to disappear instantly into darkness along with the audience. "All right then, Nikanor Ivanovich, why don't you set a good example for us?" the young actor said affectionately, "and hand over your currency." Silence fell. Nikanor Ivanovich inhaled and began quietly. "I swear to God that..." But no sooner did he speak the words than the entire house burst out in indignant shouting. At a loss, Nikanor Ivanovich fell silent.
As far as I understood, the program leader spoke, you were about to swear to God that you had no currency.
And he glanced sympathetically at Nikanor Ivanovich.
Quite right, I haven't.
Right, the actor replied. But then, if you pardon my indiscretion, what was the origin of the $400 found in the bathroom of the apartment solely inhabited by you and your spouse?
Magic,
someone in the dark theatre said with obvious sarcasm.
Quite right, magic,
Nikanor Ivanovich replied sheepishly, though it was unclear whether he was addressing the actor or the dark theatre.
Evil spirits, the checkered interpreter planted them,
he explained.
And again the house roared indignantly.
When it was silent again, the actor said,
Can you believe the La Fontaine fables I have to listen to? Planted $400. You folks, you're all currency speculators here. I ask for your expertise. Is something like this even conceivable?
We're not speculators,
various offended voices called out from the audience.
But this is inconceivable.
I wholeheartedly agree, the actor said firmly. And let me ask you, what can people plant?
A baby,
someone shouted from the theatre.
Absolutely right, the announcer confirmed. A baby. An anonymous letter? A proclamation? An infernal machine? Who knows what else? But no one is ever going to plant $400 for such idiots do not exist in nature.
And turning to Nikanor Ivanovich, the actor added with sad reproach,
You've disappointed me, Nikanor Ivanovich. I had such high hopes for you. Alas, our number has failed.
Derisive whistling, directed at Nikanor Ivanovich, came from the audience.
Speculator! They shouted. We innocents suffer because of the likes of him.
Don't admonish him, the MC said softly. He'll repent. And turning his tearful blue eyes towards Nikanor Ivanovich, he added,
Go ahead, Nikanor Ivanovich. Take your place.
Following this, the actor rang the bell and loudly announced,
Intermission, you scoundrels!
Having unexpectedly become a participant of this strange theatrical programme, the shaken Nikanor Ivanovich again found himself on his spot on the floor. Here, he dreamt that the theatre became pitch black, and the walls began to burn with red letters that said,
Turn in your currency.
Then the curtain opened again, and the MC said invitingly,
Let me ask Sergei Gerardovich Dunchil to the stage.
Dunchil turned out to be a respectable, though seriously unkempt man of about 50.
Sergei Gerardovich, the MC addressed him. For a month and a half now, you've been sitting here, stubbornly refusing to turn in the remainder of your foreign currency, at a time when the country needs it, and you do not in the least, and still you won't budge. You are an intelligent man, you understand all this perfectly, and still you won't help me out.
Regrettably, I cannot do a thing, as I have no more currency.
Dunchil calmly replied. So, how about some diamonds at least? The actor asked.
No diamonds either.
The actor hung his head, grew pensive, and then clapped his hands.
A middle-aged lady came out from the wings, fashionably dressed, that is, wearing a collarless coat and a tiny hat. The lady looked distressed. Dunchil glanced at her without batting an eyelid.
Who is this lady? The announcer asked Dunchil.
This is my wife, Dunchil said with dignity, gazing at the lady's long neck with a certain degree of disgust.
We had to trouble you, Madame Dunchil, for the following reason,
the MC said to the lady.
We wanted to ask you if your husband had any more foreign currency.
He turned it all in back then, Madame Dunchill replied nervously.
Right, said the actor. Well, if it's true then, it's true. If he turned it all in, we must immediately part with Sergei Gerardovich. Nothing we can do about that. You may leave the theatre if you wish, Sergei Gerardovich. And the actor made a grand gesture.
Dunchill turned and began to walk towards the wings in a calm and dignified fashion.
Just one moment, the MC stopped him. Let me show you one more number from our programme,
just to say goodbye.
And he clapped his hands again.
The black backdrop parted, and a beautiful young woman in a ball gown came on stage. In her hands was a golden tray containing a fat wad of cash bound with a ribbon, and a diamond necklace that flashed blue, yellow, and red fire in all directions. Dunchill took a step back, and his face turned pale. The audience froze.
$18,000 and a necklace worth $40,000 in gold, the actor announced dramatically, were what Sergei Gerardovich kept in the city of Kharkov in the apartment of his mistress, Ida Herculanovna Vors, whom we have the pleasure of now seeing before us, and who has kindly assisted us in the recovery of these treasures, which, though priceless, are worthless in the hands of a private individual. Thank you very much, Ida Herculanovna.
The beauty smiled, flashing her teeth, and her thick eyelashes fluttered.
Under your very respectable facade, the actor said to Dunchill, hides a greedy spider and an astonishing swindler and liar. You've driven us all mad with your thick-headed obstinacy in this month and a half. Go home now, and let the hell that your spouse unleashes upon you be your punishment.
Dunchill swayed and was about to fall, but someone's compassionate hands steadied him. The front curtain fell and concealed all those present on stage.
Frenzied applause shook the theatre, to the extent that Nikanor Ivanovich thought he saw the lights quake in the chandeliers. When the black front curtain rose again, the stage contained no one except for the solitary actor. He brought on a second bout of applause, bowed, and spoke. In the person of Dunchill, we have seen a typical ass in our programme. As I had the pleasure of saying yesterday, the clandestine hoarding of foreign currency is absurd. It cannot be used under any circumstances, I assure you. Take this Dunchill, for instance. He receives an excellent salary and wants for nothing. He has a lovely apartment, a wife, and a beauty of a mistress. But no, rather than living in peace and quiet, having turned in the currency and the gemstones, this avaricious dolt got himself exposed in front of everybody, and ended up with a major marital problem as well. And so, who would like to turn in theirs? No one? In that case, the next number in our programme, a famous stage talent, the actor Sava Potapovich Kurolyesov, who has been specially invited to perform excerpts from The Covetous Knight by the poet Pushkin. The promised Kurolyesov appeared on stage without delay. He turned out to be a tall, meaty, clean-shaven man in a tailcoat and white necktie. Without any sort of introduction, he composed a grim face, moved his eyebrows together, and spoke in an unnatural voice, glancing sidelong at the golden bell. Have the young hoodlum does a way to rendezvous with some sly strumpet. And Kurolyesov
told many bad things about himself. Nikanor Ivanovich heard Kuroyesov admit that a poor widow once knelt before him on her knees in the rain, howling, yet failed to move the actor's callous heart. Prior to his dream, Nikanor Ivanovich had no knowledge whatsoever of the poet Pushkin's writing, even though he knew the famous poet personally and would daily come up with phrases like, "And who's going to pay the rent, Pushkin?" or, "So I guess it was Pushkin who stole the light bulb from the stairwell," or, "Perhaps Pushkin will buy the heating fuel for us." Now, having become acquainted with one of his works, Nikanor Ivanovich grew sad. He imagined a woman on her knees in the rain, surrounded by orphans, and thought involuntarily, "What a bastard that Kuroyesov!" The latter, raising his voice with every word, kept on confessing. He managed to utterly confuse Nikanor Ivanovich by suddenly addressing someone not on the stage, and then replying for that person. He would call himself King and Baron and Father and Son, and address himself both formally and familiarly. Nikanor Ivanovich understood only that the actor died a wicked death, crying out, "Keys, my keys!" The actor then fell to the floor, gasping, and carefully tearing off his tie. Having died, Kuroyesov rose up, brushed the dust from his trousers, bowed, smiled a fake smile, and left to the sound of weak applause. As for the MC, he spoke thus. "We have just heard Sever Potapovich's fantastic rendition of The Covetous Knight. This particular knight hoped to be surrounded by frolicking nymphs and expected many other pleasant things in that vein to occur. But, as you can see, none of that happened. No nymphs came running to him, no muses brought tribute, and he never erected any glorious halls. On the contrary, he ended up most poorly, died of a stroke on his chests of foreign currency and gemstones, and to hell with him. I warn you that if you do not turn in your currency, you will end up like him, if not worse." Whether it was Pushkin's poetry or the MC's prosaic speech that made the greatest impression, a hesitant voice came suddenly from the audience. "I am turning in currency."
"Please, join me on the stage,"
the MC invited politely, peering into the dark theatre. A blonde gentleman of diminutive stature appeared on the stage. Judging by his face, he had not shaved for approximately 3 weeks.
"Pardon me, but what is your name?"
the MC inquired.
"Nikolai Kanafkin,"
the man replied bashfully.
"Yeah, pleasure to meet you, Mr. Kanafkin. So?"
"I'm turning it in,"
Kanafkin said quietly.
"How much?"
$1,000 and 20 gold 10 pieces.
"Bravo! Is that all you've got?"
The announcer stared Kanafkin right in the eyes, and Nikanor Ivanovich even thought he saw beams of light burst from those eyes and penetrate Kanafkin like X-rays. The theatre was breathless.
"I believe him,"
the actor exclaimed at last, and extinguished his glare.
"I believe him! These eyes don't lie! After all, how many times have I told you that your principal mistake lies in underestimating the significance of a man's eyes? Understand that the tongue may conceal the truth, but the eyes never. You are asked an unexpected question. You don't even flinch. You take hold of yourself in a second. You know what to say to hide the truth, and you say it most convincingly, without a fold on your face stirring. But alas, the truth, perturbed by the question, sneaks into your eyes for but a moment from the bottom of your soul. And it's all over. It is seen, and you are caught."
After pronouncing this convincing speech with much fervour, the actor inquired gently of Kanavkin.
Where is it hidden?
At my aunt's, Porohovnikova, on Prochistenka Street.
Ah, this is... Hold on, this is Claudia Ilinichna, is it?
Yes.
Oh, yes, 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 yes! That little house, across from a little garden. I know it, of course. But where do you stick 'em?
In the cellar, in a 9M candy box.
The actor clasped his hands. Have you ever seen anything like this? He cried in disappointment. Why, they'll grow all mouldy and musty in there. Can you entrust currency to people like this? Huh? Like children or something, by God?
Kanavkin also realized his faux pas and general boorishness, and hung his unkempt head.
Money,
continued the actor,
must be kept in the state bank, in specially designed, dry and well-guarded rooms. Not in your auntie's cellar, where it can be ruined by rats, among other things. For shame, Kanavkin. You're a grown man, after all.
Without a place to hide, Kanavkin resorted to picking the lapel of his jacket with his finger.
All right, then, the actor softened. Bygones are bygones.
And then he added suddenly,
Oh, and by the way, to kill two birds with one stone, save the car a trip. This aunt of yours has some of her own, doesn't she, eh?
Kanavkin did not at all anticipate this turn of events, and quivered. The theatre fell silent.
Oh, Kanavkin, the MC said with affectionate reproach. And to think I was just praising him. Looky here, he just messed up on me out of the blue. That's just silly, Kanavkin. I was just telling you about the eyes a minute ago. Anyone can see that the aunt has some. What are you tormenting us for? She does,
Kanavkin shouted boldly.
Bravo, cried the MC.
Bravo!
The theatre roared fearsomely. When all was quiet, the MC congratulated Kanavkin, shook his hand, and offered him a car ride back to town. Speaking to someone in the wings, he instructed this same car to drop by the aunt's and invite her to the women's theatre programme.
I also wanted to ask you. The aunt never mentioned where she hides hers, does she?
The MC inquired, kindly offering Kanavkin a cigarette and a lit match.
Lighting up, the latter scoffed mournfully. I believe you, I believe you, the actor said, sighing. Forget a nephew. That old hag wouldn't tell the devil himself. Well, we sure will try to awaken the human side in her. Perhaps not all the strings are rotten in her stingy little soul. All the best, Kanavkin.
The happy Kanavkin departed. The actor inquired whether anyone else wanted to turn in currency, but was met with silence.
Silly people, by God,
the actor said, shrugging, and disappeared behind the curtain. The lights turned off, and there was darkness for a while. A nervous tenor came from far off, singing, Great heaps of gold there be, and all of them belong to me. Two rounds of applause came from somewhere far away. Some lady turning it in at the women's theatre, Nikanor Ivanovich's red-headed, bearded neighbour said suddenly, and added with a sigh, Oh, if it weren't for my geese... I have fighting geese in Leonozova, my dear fellow. I fear they'll kick the bucket without me. A fighting bird is a tender creature. It needs great care. Oh, if it weren't for the geese, Pushkin, that's nothing. And he went on sighing. The theatre lit up brightly, and Nikanor Ivanovich dreamt that cooks poured in from all the doors, wearing white hats and carrying ladles. Their assistants dragged in a cauldron of soup and a cart with sliced rye bread. The audience livened up. The cheerful cooks dashed between the spectators, pouring soup into bowls and handing out bread.
Eat up, guys, the cook shouted, and turn in your currency. Why sit here for nothing? As if you really want to guzzle down this swill.
Go home, have a drink, have a bite. Nice. Let's say you, Pops. Why are you here?
A fat cook with a red neck said directly to Nikanor Ivanovich, handing him a bowl with a solitary leaf of cabbage floating in some liquid.
I don't have any! None! None!
Nikanor Ivanovich cried in a terrible voice.
Do you understand? None!
None?
Roared the cook in a deep, menacing voice. None? He asked in a female voice. None? None? He muttered soothingly, turning into the nurse, Praskovya Fyodorovna. She was shaking Nikanor Ivanovich gently by the shoulder as he moaned in his sleep. The cooks dissolved, and the theatre fell apart together with its curtain. Through his tears, Nikanor Ivanovich perceived his room in the clinic. The two men in white coats were not unceremonious cooks, harassing people with their advice, but doctors. Praskovya Fyodorovna was not holding a bowl, but a small, gauze-covered tray with a syringe on it.
What's the deal, after all?
Nikanor Ivanovich demanded bitterly during his injection.
I don't have any, and that's that. Let Pushkin turn in his currency. I have none.
None, none, soothed the kind-hearted Praskovya Fyodorovna. And no means no. Nikanor Ivanovich felt better after the injection and fell into a completely dreamless sleep. But through his cries, the unrest spread into room 120, where the patient woke up and began to look for his head, and to room 118, where the unknown master became distressed and wrung his hands as he looked at the moon, remembering that last bitter autumn night of his life, the strip of light under the basement door, the dishevelled hair. From room 118, the unrest crossed the balcony to Ivan, who woke up and began to cry. But the doctor quickly pacified all the troubled heads of sorrow, and they began to fall asleep. Ivan was the last to go, with dawn already breaking over the river. After the medicine inundated his body, serenity came, washing over him like a wave. His body relaxed, and drowsiness coated his head in a warm breeze. He fell asleep, and the last thing he heard was the pre-dawn twittering of birds in the woods. But soon they fell silent, and he began to dream that the sun was already setting over Bald Mountain, and that this mountain was surrounded by a double cordon.